everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Sport Kite Podcast. I am your host, Nick O'Neill, and I want to thank you for tuning in and listening. In this episode, we are going to share kind of some background and story about a really cool kite company that existed just a little bit ago. It kind of went dormant for a few years, and now it's hitting the scene again, and that is Focus Kites of Paul DeBacher and Hunter Brown, and they're going to kind of talk about the history of it and talk about the future of it. And just a little bit of a side note here, when we recorded this, there was quite a bit of weather going on outside. There was about 35 mile an hour wind. There was a whole bunch of rain and stuff like that. So you may hear a lot of that noise kind of coming in the background. We tried to minimize it, but it's still there. So I do hope you enjoy this episode. And when you get a chance, go on over to Focus Kites, give them a like, a subscribe, a follow, all of that on Facebook. They also are on Instagram, and they have a wonderful website. So check them out. And yeah, let's go ahead and jump into this episode.
So I'm Hunter Brown, one of the co-founders of Focus Kite Designs.
And I'm Paul DeBacher, the other co-founder of Focus Kite Designs.
We're together, one of the rare times that we're together in person, about the first time in 6 years.
I know.
Which is crazy. At the 25th annual Treasure Island Kite Festival. And it's Sunday, and there is crazy wind out there today.
Yeah, I saw white caps on the pool, I think.
Yeah, I think so. So we thought we'd take this opportunity, I guess, to chat a little bit and maybe answer some questions that people have asked us throughout the years and days as when we're around each other.
Yep, sounds good.
So you know, one of the things that I hear a lot often from people is, how did we meet?
I don't know the year anymore. It was, I think it was late 90s, where we met, I remember.
Yeah.
For the Kite Trade Show. And I'm fairly certain that was in Nevada at the time, Prim, Nevada.
I believe so, yeah.
And what I remember most from that trade show was the demo day, for where all the products is being demoed by the various manufacturers and can be used by and tried out by the dealers and by the shops. And on that demo day, there was no wind.
This was the year that you did, or I guess the Via Sport had introduced the ticket, which was your design, correct?
The first part is correct.
Okay.
They did introduce the ticket there, uh-huh. and I had a hand in the design. Okay. Ken McNeil was one mm-hmm. of the designers of that kite as well. Mm-hmm. And there was some design input from the manufacturer in France that Via Sport was repping in the States.
Yeah.
And yeah, demo day came around and there was no wind. So I don't know who was driving the car.
Regis.
I mean, was it Regis?
Regis.
Okay.
From the HQ distributor in the
States.
There
you go. And yeah, he's like, hey, hop in the back of the car.
And it was a minivan.
Minivan.
With a hatch open.
Yep.
We had the hatch above us.
So he drove us around in the desert and we were flying kites sitting next to each other and we were both flying.
Yep. In order to fly and just have fun.
Yeah.
And it was tickets that we were flying.
Those were tickets, correct.
Yeah, that we were flying. And I think, you know, in that time, we were what, early 20s ish?
Yeah. I think, no. I was actually 18.
Okay.
I remember this because I was back home in the Netherlands. I was working in a bar.
Mm-hmm.
So I was at least 18. And I, in my innocence, walked into a bar in the States, and it was one of my first trips, if not the first trip to the States mm-hmm. for me, and got booted right out.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
so it was pretty 21 and
right.
After 18 for me. So
yeah.
Late teens.
And I think I had a similar experience where, you know, we were at a kite trade show. What's everyone do in the evenings? They go and hang out in the bar and chit chat and enjoy friendships. And I was in there and I got kicked out of the bar because I was too young. You know, when drinking, I got kicked out of the bar.
Yeah.
I was too young at the hotel. But yeah, I mean, we were two of the younger people, you know, there. So I think naturally kind of, you know, connected there on that level. And we met there. But then I guess from there, how do we come to work together is another one that I hear often.
I was in and out of the States.
Sorry, you worked With a VS4.
With a VS4, correct. Mm-hmm. And did that for a couple of years up until 2003. And then lived in the Netherlands for a couple of years. And then in 2006 made the permanent move to the States.
Yeah.
And was going to choose between Wilmington, North Carolina, where you are with mm-hmm. your two stores.
Yeah.
Or Tampa area.
Sure.
So I set up a 2-week recon trip. I was going to go a week to Wilmington and a week to Tampa to see where it would be that I was going to be living. And I never made it out of Wilmington for the 2-week trip
yeah.
because you're there. You're like, hey, hang out with me. And you offered me a job to come work for you,
yeah.
work with you in the stores. And mm-hmm. she's like, all right, that's what
yeah.
we'll do.
Yeah. And I guess to elaborate on that a bit, you know, while you were working at a VS Sport and you were back in Holland and things, I had in 2000 taken over a kite store in Wilmington, North Carolina. It was, in my very early 20s, still in college, and built that store up a bit and already have so and had built kites in the past and things like that. And then, I think it was about 2005, I opened a second location that just timed out so perfect with you coming around because I needed help. It was a challenge to run two locations
yeah.
and to be able to have someone that I knew and trusted and then someone that I knew kites, come to the area. It was just, everything just aligned perfect to have, us together for that.
Yep.
It definitely worked out really well.
And that pretty quickly then morphed into us starting to work on kites together.
Yeah. You came in, you had your design for the Jinx.
Yes.
Which you have been working on and everything. And, I think you had aspirations that you would love to have a boutique kite brand and I had the kite building experience and also thought it'd be a great thing to start as well. And so I think that's where we started kind of working on some of the designs. And
that was 07, yeah.
It was 07, yeah. I think it was about 07 where we started to really kind of get serious and start playing with it. And you had the Jinx, but I think really the first kite that we really started to push forward with was the Skate.
Yeah. Which Skate. Always funny to me. We built the Skate. Basically, it was based on a design by Curtis Mitchell
mm-hmm. yeah.
that you worked on with him for him.
No. Good friends with Jeff Howard. And for those that may not know Jeff, Jeff. I had a precision kite company and built the amazing indoor kite, the Wren, as well as some outdoor kites and things that were great. And I had gone to visit Jeff out when he had his shop in McAllister, Oklahoma. And when I was out there, I built a Hoopty Fighter that was his design. But then he had this prototype and pattern for this single line glider that Chris Mitchell had designed.
Gotcha.
It was a no-sew kite. And so I built one of those while I was there with Jeff and brought it home and then went to the AKA in Muncie, Indiana and pulled that out at the indoor and people loved it. They were like, what in the world is this? No one has seen a single line glider that would just glide and you could actively control it around and things. So it was a great little kite. And I think I ended up showing it to you and we
yep.
played with it some
yep.
and we were like, ooh, There's something here.
There.
We can tweak this
yep.
a bit.
So we redesigned it, scaled it up, added elements to it, took elements away.
Sure.
One final touch was made by you, if I recall correctly, and that was the nose pocket.
Yeah. Yeah.
For coins.
Yeah. And that in itself, I think, is a funny story because we realized that the amount of weight in that nose allowed you to tune the kite to glide the way you wanted it to, or take all the way out, it just flew this ultralight little static single line, or even in wind, as we saw yesterday. we were hunting. We're like, what do we use as a weight here? And we're looking at different, metal disc and all these different things, but you couldn't
find pieces of round metal.
Yeah, you could, and none of you couldn't buy a flat piece of round metal for less than 25 cents. So coins made
a
the most
quarter, yes, or a dime or,
yeah.
Yep, or
yeah.
a nickel piece.
Yeah. And I think we both ran into it yesterday. We were having a discussion with Steve Santos here at Treasure Island, and this whole topic came up about how much how much money do you like in the nose of your skate? Yep. And I think, Paul, you said 55 cents?
It's 55 cents for me, yeah, typically, yeah, and that's, yeah, not 55 pennies. Yeah. That would be two quarters and a nickel.
Yeah, yeah. And I go back and forth. I'm normally around 55 cents, sometimes 60, two quarters and a dime. And apparently Steve mentioned yesterday that it came to a conclusion that they like 38 cents.
In the nose of the skate, yeah, for him.
Yeah. So
that became basically a great running joke and, mm-hmm, and a very recognizable thing about that cat.
Sure. Sure.
And tying into that, I always thought it was super funny that the two people mostly known for flying sport kites essentially pushed that interactive single line genre,
yeah,
of kites.
Yeah. And really, you know, when we think back on it, we're kind of right there the first to do a single, yep, line interactive, yep, kite, a glider.
I think to really push it forward. Honorable mention goes to Horvath in Switzerland,
mm-hmm,
and I think Nelson Borelli here, mm-hmm, in the States, but I don't know that he ever really pushed hard. It was,
sure,
just a couple of people that saw his designs and flew them.
Uh-huh.
But we were, I think, right there pushing and expanding and developing,
yeah,
that essentially new class of kite flying.
Sure, sure. And I think one of the things that did it was, or that helped with that was the video that we did for the skate. I mean, I remember very clearly us going into the gym at UNCW in Wilmington.
Completely legal,
sneaking in. Yeah. No, actually, well, no, I wasn't a student at the time at that point, but I had been a student there.
Yeah.
So hey, I was an alumni. I have a lot in there. You know, we flew the skate and took video of it. And then, God, that was probably one of my first forays into video editing, and put that together to some music, and we put that out there, and it got a little traction,
yep,
you know, and got some views, and because people hadn't seen that before, or a lot of people hadn't seen it before. But then I guess, you know, beyond that, we then had this, you know, I remember clearly us driving, we were driving up to the Kite Festival in Atlantic Beach, and I remember having a pad of paper because I was driving. And we're sitting there just jotting down names, potential names for the company.
Yeah.
And going along with that. And what did we want that to be? And I remember, it was columns long on paper.
It was a bit of a drive.
Yeah. And yeah, we landed on Focus.
Focus.
And I'd be interested to hear your take on why Focus. I'll say mine, but I'd be interested to hear yours. And what, because we haven't talked about this in years.
That's correct.
And I mean, just going off memory, which might not always best, but I think in my view, we chose Focus because I think with the brand, we wanted to focus on building high-end hand-built kites. At the time, we wanted them to be still affordable and accessible.
Yeah.
But we wanted to really focus on the details and it be a kites that were built by two flyers that were capable of doing, you know, all the modern tricks for the sport kites. And you know, this new genre in the single line, active single line. But we wanted that focus on detail.
Yeah. It's focus on quality, focus on the flyer, focus on detail, focus on all the things that matter in a kite, in the flyer, and the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So where the two marry or meet, or however you want to call that.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I've always felt that as, mm-hmm, well.
Yeah. No, I agree. And then, you know, I remember working with a graphic designer in Wilmington that we had used with the kite store,
mm-hmm,
Michael. And working on coming up with a logo, and I think we both kind of had an idea of this bird. And I remember him going through iteration and iteration of possible birds, and it wasn't what we had in mind. And I think it took me hand drawing something.
Yes, it was us finally doing it ourselves and handing it over.
Handing it to him, yep. And he made it clean,
yes,
and what it is to come up with a focus bird.
So fun fact, then, what do you remember? So what bird was used? Or do we make this a quiz question at some point?
It's a quiz. I'm not going to know the answer. I can't remember it now.
It was a tern.
It was a tern. That's,
yep,
right.
Yep.
That is right. It was a tern. Yeah. And I remember, like, you know, Google imaging, you know, different birds and silhouettes and trying to find that.
Yeah, it was a turn. You're right.
So I guess from there, you know, we had some kites in, you know, in our lineup. We had been building some. I think we sold one or two out of the store probably even before we officially launched, and we now had the brand name and the logo. Now it's time to launch that.
Yep.
And so we had put thought into how we were going to do that. And I think we came to the conclusion that we were going to launch at the AKA convention in Gettysburg in 2008.
Yes. That was going to be
2008.
Yep.
So we prepped for that and tried to do, I think, some creative thinking on how are we going to go about this. And we came up with the idea of we were signed up for the fly market and we were going to sell kites in the fly market. But we want to make sure we got the name out there. So we came up with the idea, which was something that I don't know if had been done before. We asked the AKA if we could sponsor the lanyards for the name tags. Because that was always a thing with the AKAs. You had the name tags, and it became a thing of trading the name tags, you know, which I'm sure the AKA loved. I think they frowned upon, but it was always a game to trade your name tags. But everyone had the name tag on, and it was always on the lanyard of some kind. And so we decided, let's sponsor it. And we sourced some black lanyards, put the red focus bird on it with the white focus kitedesigns.com, on it. And, the idea was that if people get it and they wonder who these people are. And I remember, driving up to the event and seeing people walking out of the convention hall. They had picked up their registration packets and they had their name tags on.
Yeah.
No one knew who we were.
Proud moments.
Yeah.
But us, right?
Yeah.
But
and then we show up with our black focus shirts with the red bird on the chest and a design on the back that matched up, and it started to come together.
Yep. It started to make sense. Yeah. And it was a good way of making people wonder and curious.
Mm-hmm.
And then the answer rolled in, basically.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. In that event, I think if I remember correctly, the indoor portion was very early in the event.
Correct. Yeah.
And so
it was
we were
Wednesday or a Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah. So we rolled in there with some skates and flying those.
Yep.
And of course that got a lot of attention. And then of course we had the reflection, which was your competition indoor kite.
Dual line. Yeah.
Dual line. People were like, I don't know if went crazy for the skate. It's the right word, but
super, super lucky. I won that indoor competition too. That the nationals.
Yeah, you did. You won the nationals.
That got a little bit of extra attention then.
And did you use the skate in the first portion and then the reflection? Was that a dual kite?
Yeah, I'm not sure anymore what routine I was flying there. It was either Bjork or if it was Bjork, then it was all dual.
Okay. Yeah.
I think I later moved into a routine where I used the skate and then the reflection.
Yeah. But I remember, passing around the skate at that indoor, the free open fly.
Yes.
And people were just loving it. And the thing that was cool to me was, as someone who grew up in kiting, from a young age, there's a lot of people that I looked up to a lot in kiting and kite builders as well as flyers. Mm-hmm. And those kite builders and flyers were coming to us and they wanted one of our kites. And that was a really cool feeling to me. That these people that I idolized in some ways and respected a tremendous amount wanted one of our
kites.
Came
to us and say, hey, that's really cool. Can we get one?
Yes.
And we're like, why? Yes, you can.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we had the kites at the fly market. And I remember we took quite a few skates. I can't remember the actual number, but we sold out.
I feel like it was like 25 or 40 or somewhere around
there. And I'll have to post a picture if I haven't already on the Focus Facebook page and Instagram. I've got a picture of our fly market booth and the stack of assembled skates. We didn't assemble all of them, but a stack of assembled skates all stacked up leaning against that table. Fly market.
Yeah, I remember that too. But for me on the booth or on the presentation of Focus that week there, you just mentioned an example of felt really good that established builders and kiters came to us and like, hey, that's really cool. What for me stood out that week was, I think, we decided last minute to take part in the kite building competition, the traditional AKA kite building competition.
Mm-hmm.
And people spend weeks and months of their time building a kite specifically for that competition, submitting it, having it looked over by the jury and get graded on it. And we took part in the co-op section with a sport kite straight out of the bin. It was a last minute decision. I think we're going to take part, and yeah. we took it. That kite could have been sold to a kite flyer the next day, but we took it out and we submitted it into that competition.
Yeah, and it was a original Hydra.
Original Hydra,
and it was in the I want to say green, white, black, green, white, gray.
Yeah,
color like comes green. Green.
Yeah, the fluorescent green.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember I flew it for the actual, like, the fly portion of it. And, well, actually, you were busy competing. I'll say that. You were busy competing, so I flew it for the kite competition or the building piece just to show the flight.
Yep.
And I remember the judges coming over to critique the design as well for that, but I'll let you finish.
Yeah, no, there. And that was my proud moment there, is we won the kite building nationals competition.
For cooperative
yeah. kites.
Yeah, I mean, built by two people.
Or more.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember there actually being concerns from the judges because we had our focus label on it.
Yeah.
And then being
it's
like,
a commercial kite.
Yeah, it's a commercial kite. It's a manufactured kite. And we're saying, well, sure, yes, it's available to buy, but it was built by two people. It's not built in a factory somewhere. It was built by us.
Yep.
And they were okay with that. Yes. Well, it's true.
It was true.
But yeah, they allowed that then.
That was my moment of pride that week. That you literally, the kite that you as the consumer would buy or could buy was a national award-winning kite.
Sure.
From a quality and all that perspective.
Yeah.
That made me proud.
Yeah. And, you know, part of that, though, is I take pride, and I think, like, even like that kite, the Hydra, we had a few unique features in our kites there. You know, we tried to look at those, at how a kite was built, and go, how can we do this in a way that is efficient? I think effective and efficient.
Yes.
So like the yo-yo stoppers, you know, which obviously has evolved tremendously, but instead of having something that we just like zip tied or attach on the outside.
I still like our solution the best, you know, from whatever is out there.
Yeah. We had our Dacron leading edge, and we had a slot, you know, left open for the stitching, and the yo-yo stopper was underneath the Dacron within a hole in the Dacron at a certain angle,
right?
That allowed it to poke through.
Yep.
So I mean, it was just super clean, and yep. That was just one of those examples of something we did.
I still find it the best solution.
Yeah,
ever.
It works really, really well, and it's clean.
Yeah,
very clean. And I think that's all what went into us, you know, ultimately taking that first place with the cooperative. On that list, there were some unique features, and it was built really well. And,
yes.
You know, even I think going back to that focus thing, you know, we wanted to focus on details. We wanted to focus on quality. And part of that was, we're not going to hide things. And that was just the decision.
I remember this. I know where you're going with this. You're going to off color stitches.
Yeah. We made that decision.
Contrasting stitching.
Yeah. We will do contrast, well, white stitching.
Yeah.
Because it was very common in that, hey, I'm going to do the leading edge black. I'll use black thread for that.
So said, no. If it's a little rough, the stitching, it just won't stand out.
Yeah.
And we were like, no, we're going to highlight this.
Yeah. So we used white stitching on the whole kite, including the leading edge.
Yeah.
So it's a few maybe little reinforcement bits that we did make the decision to do some black on, but for the most part, it was white stitching.
I remember, I'm going to throw you under the bus here a little bit. I remember it made you nervous in the beginning.
Oh, it still makes me nervous. It's kind of show. It's like, this is going to show.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we took.
But it made you step up the game.
Oh, for sure. It makes you.
And it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It looked really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. It stands out. And I can see it in pictures now where, you know, that white thread pops sometimes. It looks good.
Yeah.
That became our style.
That became basically a trademark. Mm-hmm. And again, it shows that we were standing behind the product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And the other cool little feature I think we did as well was, and this, you brought this to the table, totally you, was the batten pocket on the leading edge for the winglet, on both the Jinx and the Hydra, how it's a fold back of the leading edge material and then fold back forward to create a pocket there. So again, we didn't have to go put in some other pocket, another piece or anything like that. So it was efficient to build, but extremely effective in the job it was doing.
And nice and slick and all that.
Mm-hmm. And that I'm aware of, I never saw one pop out either. Or I'm sorry, when I say pop out, pop through the backside of the pocket or anything like that.
Yeah, we didn't use vinyl end caps. We used like hard caps.
Yeah.
Little detail, but it
sure
made it work.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, from there, so we've now launched the brand and we're you know, building things. We had the website up and, you know, started to sell kites. But I think pretty quickly after that, we started moving on to generation 2 of kites. which, you know, became a generation two of the Jinx and the Hydra. They've got new graphics. Yep. I remember you going home in the evenings and having a rum and coke or something and getting the creative juices going. and those graphics were all you. Well, all you. I mean, I guess I got to have my input when you brought them back.
Yes, it was. It was like, here, how do you like this? Not so much. Maybe more like that or more like this. Oh crap! Next, go home. Next day, come back. How do you like this?
Yeah. Might have contributed to you having an alcohol problem. Totally a joke. It's not having an alcohol problem.
Well, it's not a problem. That's
So I guess we moved into generation two of kites, including the skate, ended up getting a new graphic as well. Correct me if I'm wrong here. I think I pushed a little bit that, hey, let's do a big version of the skate.
I don't know if it was you or if it was a bunch of customers talking to you.
Yeah.
I remember that we were getting people that were like, oh yeah, we really like the gliding part of things, but we just like to just sit back on our beach chairs with the skate up and it gets really small really quick.
That's right.
Because it's a 4-foot kite.
That's right. Yeah.
And so the next logical step was, and I don't know if those people came to you or to us or all, but the next logical step was, well, crap, if you are going to turn your interactive single line kite into a static single line kite, we might as well make that shape into a big static single line kite that maybe you can then turn back into an interactive kite if you really want to.
Sure. Yeah. And I remember very
clearly.
Definitely
a monster. Though.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it's a 10.5 foot.
Yeah, I remember 11 foot.
Yeah. I recently measured it. It's like 10 foot seven or something like that. But it's a big kite, but I remember very clearly going out in the parking lot in front of the store at the Cotton Exchange and flying the first one in the gusty wind because we were so excited to get it out there and see, and it worked, and we continued to refine that design a bit and launched that. And I think that, you know, it's been one of those kites that over the years that I've been asked for the most of, I'd like to have a focus skate because it became this kite that I just would hear time and time again. People are like, that they'd be in an event and the only kite up would be a Manta.
Yep. And that's I was, I think, a little bit more active on the traveling festival circuit. And I can't remember the amount of times that a Manta would be the only kite in the sky, late in the afternoon / evening or very early in the morning.
Yeah.
Been thanked many times by festival organizers, like, oh, thanks for having something up there.
Sure.
No worries. Yeah. And I was never worried about, this is always a light wing kite. It was always a niche filler in that sense. I've never been too worried about the standard and high winds because there was plenty of solutions for that by other manufacturers or home builders or whatever. I've always very much enjoyed occupying that little pocket of low to no winds because there wasn't that much for it. And so that's automatically stood out if you were able to fly in those conditions. Yeah.
But then on top of that, the thing that became obvious to me with the Manta as well was, you know, you and I had that opportunity to go to Colombia, South America and travel around some. Mm-hmm. And I remember very clearly being at that kite festival we went to up high on the mountain there and very gusty winds. And we've got the Manta up there and both the Manta and the Skate, even though they're super ultralights, they will handle a little bit of wind, even though it's not what they're intended for, because that frame is flexible. And those wingtips will just kind of push back.
Yep.
And I remember those things, we put a little stiffer spreader in them.
Yep, correct.
And then taking some wind up there on top of that mountain and everything there.
What I remember about that whole wind thing was, and it filled me with horror, but we had a customer of a skate call us up in the store. I was like, hey, I don't know if you know this, but the wind range of that skate is like upwards of 20 miles an hour. It folds up a little, but it's upwards of 20 miles an hour.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And not what it was meant for.
He
did it.
But it does it. And I mean, to that point, and I'm sure I'll put up a video of it on the Focus page soon, is yesterday we're out here at Treasure Island. Not to say the wind was blowing hard, 10 to 12 at the time, maybe, or something like that. But my 6-year-old son is flying a little skate and doing quality control apparently on it and just yanking that thing.
I was looking over my shoulder. I saw
just
that. I'm
flexing
like, oh,
back.
Hunter is flying his cape.
Hey, watch it. Thanks, Paul. But yeah, no, that's a resilient little kite. Yes. That microcarbon frame that just bends and doesn't break.
Yeah, it doesn't break.
Yeah. I mean, you can bend it in a circle if you need to.
Yep.
So yeah.
Cool.
That's
cool. Cool kite. Fun kite.
Yeah. So yeah, things.
Is this where you go? Everybody needs one in their bag?
Yes, everyone needs one in their bag for sure. The skate. Yes. Yes. So then, we're building kites. And then, hey, things happen, life changes, there's different courses in life, and that time came for you and I, due to certain factors, it was time to close the store. We still did Focus together for a bit.
2008 world crisis, yes. I would say, had something to do with
that. So closed the store in late 2009, you and I continued to do Focus, into 2010, attended Kite Party. I think that was back in 2009, that we did that, but continued on in 2010. And then that life change came. You had that job opportunity, Washington State.
On the West Coast, all the way on the other side. Yeah.
I took a new career path, as well. And then, I think we both hated to do it, but we had to make that decision. It was time to stop Focus.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Or halt focus.
Pause focus, yes. Pause. Yeah.
I don't think we ever emotionally said that this is a hard stop.
I agree with that. Yeah, I agree.
In fact, we even tried to continue production using another in the US
builder.
And unfortunately, I think we worked on that for a year and a half, and it just didn't work out.
Right.
We couldn't make it work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was unfortunate, but it was the right decision to not force it, I think.
Sure. No, I agree with you. And I mean, like you say, kind of the falls. I mean, it's not like we never got rid of the templates. We never got rid of the stuff, and the extra stickers and the labels and all that kind of stuff. It all stayed and kind of, I think always knew like, hey, we want to come back to this one.
Yep.
And so, through the years, I know. Well, before we go there, I guess, say, there came a time where, I guess, and you can tell this part, but either you were approached or somehow it came up with In the Loom was interested in licensing some of the kites.
Correct. There was, I don't know actually what year that was. I think I was working on that in maybe 2011.
Okay.
So I was indeed on the West Coast. And yes, Into the Wind wanted to license some of the designs. Mm-hmm. And they did, and they took the Hydra, and they took the Skate, they took the Manta, and they took the Echo, which was a low wind, outdoor, no wind, indoor type street kiting type kite.
Yep.
And it took, but of course they needed different graphics.
Right.
More alcohol. we got Into the Wind to carry on those designs,
yep.
which I was very happy about.
Yeah. And which. To be clear as well, it was something that you worked on. You did come to me at some point for my blessing with it, and of course gave it, and was happy to, again, I was happy to see those designs go on as well.
Yes.
And things there. So, and in the lens, I think, they still make, at least the Skate and the Manta.
Skate and the Manta.
I
honestly don't know about the Echo.
Yeah, not sure.
I think they did discontinue the Hydra at this point.
But they've done a good job with it. They're still available for them. They're doing a great job with them. And they're at reasonable prices. And so it's great to see those designs still going on. But then through the years with staying in touch with kite flyers and friends in the kite world and things, I know I've always been asked, especially for the Manta, sometimes custom skates, things like that. But then we had a great opportunity and an honor to get asked about building some kites for a new project with Disney.
Yeah.
Kitetales.
Yeah.
Credit goes to Scott Weeder, I think, for helping to make that happen for us.
He helped facilitating. Yeah. He pushed for the designs.
He showed the designs to the Disney executives.
He loved the kites. Mm-hmm. We've been working and playing with them for a very long time.
Yeah.
So he was definitely opening the door for us.
Sure.
I think.
Sure. And they selected the Skate. However, they wanted a little different shape to it.
Right.
And they selected the Manta.
Yep.
And we had to work with them on changing some of the construction to meet their needs.
Yep.
Which, funny, isn't actually like making them more durable. Even though these kites are being used in 6 shows a day, 7 days a week, in really wild conditions, you know?
Yep.
And around concrete and everything, they actually wanted them.
Nothing conducive to the lifespan of a kite,
sure,
I'd say.
Sure. Yeah. So we, you know, that came up, we worked together on those from a design and thought process. I did the building on all of those and worked with them.
We discussed doing it together, but logistically it just didn't make any sense.
You're right. And you know, at one point it looked like they were going to need a lot more kites than they ended up needing.
Yeah.
I think they narrowed it down that they felt that they could get away with less kites, which they're doing a great job with. And once it became less kites, it didn't make sense to be sending sales across the country to have them send back across the country. But, you know, so we got to make 2 models, you could say, but 3 different designs of kites. A manta that is printed with official Disney artwork that has Mr. Ray on it, which this is first time I saw that kite fly when I tested it in the backyard with my son. The flexibility of the wingtips of the manta, when you had that Mr. Ray put on it, just made it come to life. It just really looked like Mr. Ray out there, kind of like hanging out in the water, his wingtips flexing.
You called me about that one, and I was lucky enough to be able to see it for myself this week here at Disney.
Yeah. And then we did the skate, which has kind of a fishtail looking design to it now, with one with a Sebastian on it, one with a flounder on it.
Yeah.
And those 3 kites, which of course we had to build multiples of them so they can work, they know they're going to wear through them. Those kites are used in the pre-show of Kite Tales at Animal Kingdom theme park. So, I mean, what an awesome thing for us, you know, that, you know, we have kites that are flying at a Disney theme park, but they're used in that pre-show. And that pre-show is the same for all 6 shows. As where the on-water show is either a Jungle Book show or a Lion King show.
Right.
The pre-show is the same. So those three designs are the only kites that are used in all 6 shows every day.
6 shows, and 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And thousands of, well,
thousands of people a day.
Per day. I mean, I sat there, and even at the beginning of a show, I'm looking at my show, I'm like, that was not so busy. 5 minutes later, looking at my show, and all the bleachers are filled.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And I watched 5 shows in one day, and every show, it was the same pattern.
Yeah. And the thing that I'll say to that, to give credit where credit's due, the Kite Man team, the team that puts on the show.
Kite Man, Bruce, Flora, and his compadres.
Yeah, all of them. They do an amazing job. You know, I felt honored and lucky to have been able to build some tools that they get to use in the show, but it's them and the performers that make that show amazing. I mean, I'll speak for myself. You know, the first time I saw it, I teared up a little bit.
I'm not going to admit to anything of that kind, but I did.
Yeah. So, they do an amazing job, and all the kudos go to them for what they're doing. I mean, they're exposing so many people to kites, and we're fortunate enough to have some of our designs in this kite.
And
in
the show. Would you say that project, because that's a while back at the start now, it just came to life. I think the show opened 1st of October, but the prep for that was going on long before that.
Long before.
Is that what gave you the idea of possibly doing what now?
Yeah, it did. So, you know, getting back into the building of it, you know, I was able to, I've had kind of a kite workshop in the house for a little while in hopes of being able to build again, because there's always that creative urge, that sense that you want to build something and create something is always there. So building those kites for Disney, it rejuvenated that even more, and in a way forced me to figure out how to make the time amongst my daytime career, which I have no intentions of, you know, of leaving or anything like that. My daytime career is my daytime career. So I'll say it that way. And of course I have a family now, so I have to balance time between family and work. But it allowed me to see how I can fit in some kite building in there. And with over the years being asked for certain kites, the manta being one of them, like, you know what? I think I can bring back focus a bit, and build start out with the Manta, build some custom Mantas, and then to see where it goes from there. And of course, when that time came and that thought came, of course, called you up because I wanted, because Focus, I still, no matter what, whether you and I are together or not, Focus is us.
Yes.
It is ours.
Yes.
And I would never, just like you called me up about the End of the Wind job, I would never do anything with Focus without your blessing.
No, yeah, because obviously that was a 5 second decision making process.
Yeah. Yeah. And so slowly been working on, you know, relaunching it. I had the Focus Facebook page had been paused and was able to unpause that, start posting there again and through some other social media and trying to just let
what
people
about,
know.
What about the website?
Website's in the works. And that's really working on that now. That'll become more priority because I had to finish the Disney kites. So that became, that was taking up a lot of time. And then I had a special custom project that I was working on as well. And now that those two things are behind me, I can put a little bit more time into the website and get an official launch out there. And the thing that I want to make clear, with that, and I hope everyone can understand it as well, is, I'm going to build kites, but it's different than what it was in a sense of life is different. And this is something that I do. I'll be doing the building.
Not us anymore. It's going to be just you.
Because we're across the country.
Yep.
So I'll be doing the building. But again, you and I talk regularly. I bounce things off of you regularly, and you're still involved. But I have to balance this in with work and with family. And even though I love to do it, if I'm going to take time away from family, it still has to be worth my time to do that. So the option will be there to have kites built. They won't be cheap, and they won't be as low cost as maybe they were. But you'll be able to get a custom built kite that is made to the utmost in quality, like we built before.
Maybe even colors. Better now that you're building them all by yourself.
I don't know about all that. But you'll get one that is built in the colors that you want. We already have for the Manta a colorizer out there for on kitepaint.com. So people can go build their own one there, the colors that they want. But everyone.
Thanks, Waddy.
Yeah. Thanks, Waddy. But everything will be built. Custom, not to say there may not be one or two that I build stock or something to take to an event. So the kites will be there, and they'll be able to be custom ordered. I'll announce pricing and things like that once the website goes live around that time. But for folks that want one, that option will be there. For anyone who isn't or doesn't want to pay the price, that's fine. And I understand that. And that's all well and good. And the End of the Wind versions of the Skate and the Manta are there and they do a good job with them. Yeah. And so that'll be a more affordable option.
Awesome.
Than what I'll be building. But, people have that opportunity to have a Focus.
So are you going to be the rock band that's playing their old hits, or are you going to maybe write some new songs?
Wow, that's a great question. So right now we're going to start with bringing back some of the classics, the original, the Manta in its original panel layout that we did for Focus.
Okay.
Because to be clear, the End of the Wind is a different panel layout, as you mentioned before. If someone wants a custom color skate that's built by Focus, that will be an option as well. But then I've already been working on, not to say it's straight up new, but for many years, this is actually funny because even though you and I are apart, we both kind of had the same idea and actually both built our own mid-sized Manta.
Yep.
Or Eagle Ray or something.
Mid-sized skates.
Exactly. For me, working name has been mid-sized Manta, but we'll figure out an official name for it, but about a seven and a half foot one.
We came up with literally the same frame configuration.
Yep. Same configuration, about the same size,
yep.
On our own independently and did that. And then, for those who are interested on the Focus, social media outlets, you can find a video of me gliding in the backyard. I do have plans to make that available. Just kind of finalizing the panel layout that I want to do for that. Panel layout is there. I like to a degree, and some people have very much liked it. But it's I'm still playing with some options on that. And then from there, it's going to kind of come down to a time thing. There's a few ideas for some new stuff, but it'll come down to a time thing because that design process takes time.
Lots
of time. But no, I'd love to create something new. And I would love that opportunity for us to really co-design something new together. Yeah. Again, even though
I think it'd be fun. And that is something that can be done with the great distance between us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that'd be super cool.
Yeah.
I'd like that.
Yeah. No, me as well. So yeah, you know, we'll see what the future holds, but I mean, focus is coming back on a small scale. There's no ambitions of it being a full-time career.
Right.
We all know how kiting goes for that. There's a few people out there that are able to make it their full-time career and just totally support them in that. But, for me, it's, you know, it's no plans of it being a full-time career. It'll always be kind of a side thing, but that means that the kites that are built will be built with taking their time and done right.
Yeah, exactly. They'll be all right.
Yeah.
So, awesome.
Yeah. Cool.
Focus rides again.
It does. Yeah.
Keep an eye out. More to come.
All right. What an awesome episode. And a big shout out to Paul DeBacher and Hunter Brown for kind of just sharing all of that past and sharing their thoughts about the future and kind of sharing everything. It's just so awesome to sit down with these guys and have a chat. They are regulars here on the Sport Kite podcast, so you are going to hear quite a bit more of them. If you've just started listening, do go back through a whole bunch of our past episodes. You'll hear their voices and their insight. So yeah, we'll hear more from them. We'll also hear more about Focus Kites in the coming year. And yeah, hope you really enjoyed it. If you wouldn't mind giving us a like and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to, and share these episodes with your friends, with people that might be interested in sport kite flying. It really, really does help boost the signal, and hopefully it encourages more people to get out there and fly. All right, with that, we're going to go ahead and sign off and head out onto the field. And yeah, thank you for tuning in and listening. See you out there.